four times.
Now it's solid now. Yeah, it's recording.
Oh, there it goes. Good morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of many international lodges around the world that whose sole being, for want of another word, is to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy and ancient wisdom religion. But wherever you go, you will always hear the same declaration. It may be in different languages, but it's always the same. And we'll read it now. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but it does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists wherever and however situated is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So in order for this lodge to fulfill its purpose that of the declaration, we hold two meetings a week. We're of course restarting now in September on our Sunday classes, which for now we're reading The Epitome of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We're looking at reincarnation and human destiny today. Next week, we'll be looking at karma and spiritual development. And our meeting starts at 11, is over at 12. The doors open at 10:30, and the book table is open before and after meetings. On Wednesdays, we're in the Bhagavad Gita still, and the class runs from 7:30 to 8:30. Our library, which is a reference library, is open from 5:15 until 7:15, and the book table, of course, is open before and after the meeting. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So, how we will have the meeting go today is that it's very short, but there are quite a few different topics that are going to be covered. in this very short part. And what we thought we would do is we have volunteers who will, we have it broken up into three sections, and we will have volunteers read a section, and then after the one section, we'll discuss it. And at the end, after we're done discussing those three sections, if there's time, we can open it up to questions on any part of those three sections that we're going to look at. Just as a review, because we were off in August, the last class looked at, it says, Theosophy also teaches the existence of the astral light and the Akasha. It talked a lot about the Akasha and the astral light. And it seemed as though that was basically, it also talked about the elementals and good and bad thoughts, how it affects that. So we're really getting into some very interesting ideas. So now the part starts on page 21 and goes to page 23. We'll start with the section that goes in the Kali Yuga, and we'll have a volunteer read that section and go down to page 22, Higher Spirit.
In the Kali Yuga, we are hypnotized by the effects of the immense body of images in the astral light, compounded of all the deeds, thoughts, and so forth of our ancestors, whose lives tended in a material direction. These images influence the inner man, who is conscious of them by suggestion. In a brighter age of influence of such images would be towards truth. The effect of the astral light as thus molded and painted by us will remain so long as we continue to place those images there, and thus become our judge and our executioner. Every universal law thus contains within itself the means for its own accomplishment and the punishment for its violations, and requires no further authority to postulate or to carry out its deeds. The astral light, by its inherent actions, both evolves and destroys forms. It is the universal register. Its chief office is that of a vehicle for the operation of the laws of karma, or the progress of the principle of life, and it is thus, in a deep spiritual sense, a medium or mediator between man and his deity, his highest spirit.
Thank you. One of the interesting parts that we found in this reading was the paragraph, the first full paragraph on page 22. It starts with the astral light. It says, the astral light, by its inherent action, both evolves and destroys forms. So we were wondering if we could put it out to the group about what actually is it going on when it says inherent action both evolves and destroys forms. Especially destroying. We were kind of curious about that. Yes.
Well, we were more curious about the creation part.
Okay.
But natural is starry matter. So it is matter. And so therefore the creation, the matter can be created or destroyed, but it's not really destroyed. Mm-hmm. It's just the forms that are destroyed.
Yes.
There's an idea of cohesion. So when the strength of the cohesion begins to dissipate, the form dissolves. So something materializes by being drawn through consciousness or strong will to a single point. So that death is really more like a disintegration or a separation, a loss of will, a loss of desire. So we see, and we think we die in the physical, but we die in the astral first.
Right.
That's what begins to disintegrate. And those that are, told that are sensitive can see that change. That disintegration of your astral around you. And so I think that's what I'm intending to say.
Mm. Thank you. Yes, in the back.
We think that that last point, it is very clear in helping us understand someone who is truly developed in the sense of seeing psychically will see that somebody is dying years before the physical deteriorates because the astral starts deteriorating. In other words, the physical is just the matter called to the electric substance of that body. So the astral is your real body. So when it goes, the physical has to go.
Hmm. Yes.
And the astral is present at the moment of conception.
Yes, and it's interesting. We were trying to figure out with the astral body, how is it connected with the astral light? And we know that they're both a material, they're not spiritual. And we were thinking that the astral body is an individual, how can we put it? It's when we're looking at the two of them with the astral light and the astral body, that it's an individuality of the astral light. We don't think that's coming across right, but yes, thank you.
We might ask, what does electricity have to do with a light bulb?
Mm-hmm. It powers it.
The light bulb is made out of substance to reflect electricity. The physical substance is made to reflect the astral light, and we call that the astral body, because it's a singular unit for that expression. You can't have the physical without the astral, but
right.
You don't have to have the physical to be in manifestation. It would be an astral manifestation only.
Thank you. Yes, in the back.
And also it says on page 22, the astral light by its inherent action both evolves and destroys forms. I like that statement. It is the universal register.
Right. By being the universal register, it's like almost like a trash can that everything is thrown into it. And especially with the astral light, it's the lowest rung, with the Akasha being the highest. And so everything that happens negatively is floating around. in the astral light. So it is a register of everything that is going on. And where it talks about in Kali Yuga, we are hypnotized by the effect of the immense body of images in the astral light. And it talks about deeds and thoughts and everything going back to our ancestors. And it's all material. There's nothing spiritual in it. And it says the images influence the inner man. So we can be affected by whatever is out there. And we know this when we go into a room and there's somebody or a group of people that are, they're angry, they're materialistic. We can feel that, and that's the astral that we're feeling. It's all the negativity in it. So, let's see what else. Anybody else have it? Yes, in the back?
We're thinking about animals. If you know your animals, your pets, then you know when they don't trust somebody or they don't like somebody, and that animal is reacting to the astral. But just as we can be affected by it, we cannot be affected by it. It is our own doing.
Yeah, it's our motive and our heart. If we have a pure heart and a pure motive, that is one way that we can affect not being affected by the astral. And on the same token, if we put positive energy out, positive thoughts, and the last class talked about how your thoughts are physical things. So by putting these thoughts, positive thoughts out, we can affect a positive change. Yes.
We're wondering about two things in the first sentence of the part. That in Kali Yuga we are hypnotized by the effect of the immense body of images in the astral light. So we're wondering, it's just in Kali Yuga, there's something about Kali Yuga where the astral has such an effect, we'll say. But the other thing is, if we're hypnotized, does that mean that our higher principles are really not operating, that we're kind of just, that's a question.
It's
two questions.
Well, in regards to Kali Yuga is the dark age. It's very materialistic. So there are a lot of these images, these negative images that are being placed into the astral light because of the darkness and the materialism of the Kali Yuga, the dark age. And in regards to the idea of being hypnotized, well, there are many people who are just fascinated with the materialism, not spiritual, or if they do go to church, it might be because they just, that's just the way their family was brought up. They're not really going for spiritual purposes. They're not looking to their inner self, their higher nature, because there is so much materialism that the astral light is affecting so much of what is going on now. So we think in regards to the hypnotism with that word, it may not be the exact process that a hypnotist would do but you, the person, the people are becoming obsessed. Well, we know the whole thing with technology and where that's heading in regards to artificial intelligence, and there's so many jobs being taken over by technology. People don't have jobs. So there's so much heaviness around, and people are just consumed with materialism, and maybe they're wanting to get the money and things that their neighbors have, and they, you know, they spend too much, they have credit card debt. There is just so much materialism running rampant that maybe they're not truly hypnotized, but we think they might be obsessed. So, yes.
Well, we would have to say that we're all hypnotized. You know, we've all been programmed. We've all gone through the school system. We've all had touches with religion,
mm-hmm.
and discipline, and all these kind of things. So we, you know,
Well, we have all been affected, but we're here. We're here now. We've been questioning. We've been thinking. We have realized that it's the inner world that's the important one. That even the people that go to church and are very committed to their church, it's still an outward expression that they're being taught, not an inward, not taking the responsibility. So we have brought from past lives to this one that we have been affected. We have had touch with these ideas. So we are here, and we are trying to break that, maybe not an obsession, but we're trying to break that mold that our parents, our families, our friends had tried to get us to follow from our childhood. We'll have one more question, then we'll go on.
It's the comparing, why is it more this way in Kali Yuga? If we think of the earlier ages, they were slower moving.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get results or returns so quickly. It's sort of like being on vacation versus working at a hectic job. Kali Yuga is like a hectic job. Although in this day and age, even people on vacation are working, are constantly getting email, and there is no rest or peace. And that is kind of the secret of Kali Yuga. So we have to make our own vacation, rest, and peace.
Yes, in regards to the Kali Yuga, and it's a shorter period of time, but it's very heavy. It's, as we said, it's very materialistic, but any advances we make will be it'll be faster. It will get more progress because we have so many diversions here. So we'll start the second reading on that. Also is on page 22. It starts with Theosophy also tells of the origin, and that'll go to page 23. Advance and themselves develop.
Theosophy also tells us of the origin, history, development, and destiny of man. Upon the subject of man, it teaches first that each spirit is a manifestation of the one spirit and thus a part of all. It passes through a series of experiences in incarnation and is destined to ultimate reunion with the divine. Second, that this incarnation is not single, but repeated. Each individuality becoming reincarnated through numerous existences in successive races and constitution of man is subdivided and accepted every man. The main divisions being those of body, soul, and spirit. These divisions and their relative development govern his subjective condition after death. The real division cannot be understood and must for a time remain esoteric because it requires certain senses not easily developed for its understanding. If the present sevenfold division, as given by philosophical writers, is adhered to strictly without any conditional statement, it will give rise to controversy or clarity. For instance, spirit is not a separate person. It is the synthesis of the whole and is equally present in the other six. The present various divisions can only be used as a general working hypothesis to be developed and corrected as students advance and themselves.
Thank you. So, on page 22, where it discusses upon the subject of man, Theosophy teaches, and it goes first, second, and third. And it's interesting because the way these three are phrased, it's a very interesting look at the three fundamental principles. So we'll just, any questions, comments? Yes.
Well, the very first one, it's stating there that we do not have to worry about anything, and that we are ultimately going to the same place, that the resistance that we feel is are not wanting to let go. To personality or whatever. So we are ultimately destined to be back to the source. And our journey then is really a one of consciousness, of understanding that.
So are the comment having to do with our ultimate destination then is reunion back with the divine from whence we came. And we have so many distractions, as we were speaking about earlier, and that's our trial, is to try and break away from those distractions, keep our, you know, try and elevate our lower mind by thinking thoughts about universal brotherhood, about spirituality. We can, you know, we have so many wonderful books out at the book table that can help point us in the right direction. So we do have, we are able to break away from these distractions, but our first step is to realize that this is what we have to do, is to break away and to try and be open to the movement of the higher. Yes.
So this is the basis of universal brotherhood. It's the first being a manifestation. We're all, and all of embodied life, the manifestation of the one spirit, passing through experiences, but ultimately reunited. And our division is just an illusion that we are all one. Mm-hmm. But it's a necessary illusion to work out the karma that we've accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
Under law, must be dealt with. It will be dealt with sooner or later.
Yes, sooner or later. We Well, that's the whole idea with universal brotherhood and that the great sin of separateness that we speak of periodically is that we are all one. We all are gods in the making. We all are rays of the divine. So whatever our neighbor is going through, that's his karma. That's what they have brought forward into this life. And whatever is happening to this person, it's our duty to try and not be critical, to try and not make fun of or be angry with this person, because this is their karma, their lessons, this is what they're going through in order to progress as well. Yes.
Just should we just look to see if there's any way we can help or aid that person without disturbing what they have created, but to just be a friend in need, or just say an encouraging word.
Right.
And
should,
that's the hardest thing to do.
Yes.
When we're caught up in everything.
That's it. It's like, how much should we be involved? Are we going to be codependent with these people? But it's like, it is. It's a hard decision. But and we have discussed that exact issue. And we have always been told, and we think it's, you know, err on the side of helping. And we have to look at it, the situation. If the person is crossing the street, we love this example. If the person's crossing the street and you see a car coming that's going to hit them, oh, I'm not going to push them out of the way. It's their karma? No, you're going to go and push them out of the way. But if we're looking at the idea of money, how much money do you give this person? You have to look at all the issues involved. And then the Gita talks about your duty. What comes to you is what you need to deal with. It's something that has been brought to you by your actions in a previous life. So if these issues with another person comes to you, you at least have to look at it and see how much help do you think this person needs to have. And, you know, that in the second and the third fundamentals, we're looking at, you know, our evolution based upon our actions. So if our actions have to do with a person in need, then we need to look at and try and decide. Each person's situation is different. Your situation is different. So it has to, there's a lot going on to how much you act. Is this a follow-up?
Yeah, well, yeah. The fact that we are hypnotized, you know, that we have a lot of negative energy coming to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we are often prone to look at the negative side of life, or why things aren't happening. What did we do wrong? What's the matter? Why, you know, and really we may have to do that, but we always need to be positive. If we are fighting the age of negativity, we must endeavor to be positive. And when you get depressed, you get negative, you know, it's sort of a disease of the Kali Yuga. So just a simple gesture of trying to be positive and not really dwelling on the negative and what's wrong. Dwell on what's right.
And just, it's amazing when at like when you're food shopping, you're at the drugstore, you can always tell if the cashier is having a bad day and they don't make eye contact, they really don't say much to you, and even if it's just like, oh man, isn't it hot outside today? And sometimes that's all they need is a friendly, hi, how are you, before they perk up. And in the last class before we broke for August, talking about, this is the case with good and bad thoughts alike, and as the will beneath the generality of wicked thoughts is usually powerful, we can see that the result is very important, because the elemental has no conscious and obtains its constitution directly from the thought. And it, because of this, it says if you fix your thoughts upon a person in anger or in critical, uncharitable judgment, you attract to yourself a number of those elementals that belong to, generate, are generated by this particular fault or failing, and they come back upon you. So the more we think of these negative thoughts,
or we look at life in a negative way,
it will come back to us. Yes.
But we know that codependent is used in a way as an unhealthy codependency, but really we are all codependent. We need to be. We need each other. We all need each other. We need people that we don't like, and people that we love. We all need each other. There's no such thing as the self-made man. That's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that the hard part is, though, when people separate themselves from you, when you're acting with good motives and good intentions, and you're trying to be honest, and then they don't like what you have to say, and you may never see them again,
mm-hmm.
and then you feel bad about it, but you know, whatever. But that's karma too. They need to.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to learn our lessons, and there's always plenty of other people that we can associate with, and good deeds that we can do if we're not caught up in the whole dynamic, then we can start looking in other directions, and maybe that's why it will happen, because we all need to look elsewhere.
And that's the whole thing. When we're looking at these three fundamentals, is that they're basically saying that we are all connected, that how we respond to what is coming to us, and the Gita talks about not expecting anything in return by doing our duty, then the more we do it, and our intuition, we need to trust our intuition, and especially with the last comment about how do we know to help others, intuitively, we need to trust ourselves to know what it is we need to do. Yes?
Well, in our experience, on page 22, that paragraph, the astral life, evolves and destroys others. The operation of the Lord is permanent. And it does, in a deep spiritual sense, a meeting or mediate between man and his deity, his higher spirit. So we'll try to think of something that approaches this idea as best we can. And we were thinking of that song, "The Climbing Jacob's Ladder." That brought to mind that wonderful opera house video called "The
in regards to the music, classical music, it's sound. And it is said that the astral light is dominated by light, whereas the Akasha is sound, which is the highest spiritual portion of the astral. So when we're feeling, when we're having these feelings from listening to beautiful music that harmonizes, it affects the highest portion of our nature. Yes.
So we attract those elements.
Exactly. Yes, we attract those positive spiritual elementals, and that's the whole thing. It's like the more that we not perform, but the more that we get involved with higher, loving, compassionate ideas, the more we will attract to us and populate the astral with these positive ideas. So we'll just, I'll read the last section. It goes from page 23, the next paragraph, the state of spiritual, and it goes to, this law is inflexible and wholly just. All such painful states are transitory, the state of spiritual but comparative rest, known as Devakan, is not an eternal one, and so is not the same as the eternal heaven of Christianity, nor does hell correspond to the state known to theosophical writers as Avicii. All such painful states are transitory and purificatory. Thank you, states. When those are passed, the individual goes into Devakan. Hell and Avicii are thus not the same. Avicii is the same as the second death, as it is in fact annihilation that only comes to the black magician or spiritually wicked, as will be seen further on. The nature of each incarnation depends upon the balance as struck of the merit and demerit of the previous life or lives, upon the way in which the man has lived and thought, and this law is inflexible and wholly just. Now, we know that many people who don't have a full understanding of karma and reincarnation feel as though karma is just, well, I can't do anything about it. Whereas we know that karma is just, and that what comes to us is our responsibility, and that it doesn't matter if those lessons come to us, it's our duty, and we have a choice as to how we are going to respond to whatever it is that happens. So just because we're having a rotten life, as was said in one of the comments, it's our choice as to how we are going to respond to it, if we're going to be positive, if we're going to be negative, if we're going to still help others. You hear on the news and you read in the paper all the time about people that really don't have a lot, but they're still giving to others, they're still helping. And there are a lot of foster parents out there that are good and kind people that are bringing these children in, helping them as much as they can, and they don't have a lot themselves. So it's your reaction to what is happening. And the law is inflexible. It doesn't matter what comes to you is yours. It's your responsibility, and it's just. Yes.
So the painful states don't last. They can seem like forever when you're going through it. But we have to keep in mind, we have to be the observer and realize that they are transitory and temporary, and they're for our purification. So then it says that when those are passed, the individual goes through Devakan. So that's the second death, the death of the astral when it's sloughed off in Kamaloka. And that's when we're done with all the negativity,
mm-hmm.
all the pain and whatnot. But it's for our own good.
Right, and then when we go into Devakan, the highly spiritual, what is left that we feel as though we have not been able to accomplish, we absorb it so that that will come back into a future life, not necessarily the next one. Yes?
So therefore, the astral really isn't destroyed at death. Only a portion of
right.
That there's this higher astral that we even call our character. Like, where does that come from? You know, where does this whole aspect of our being come from? And,
skandhas? I mean, skandhas, what is left?
Personality.
Yeah, the personality is destroyed with each life, but the skandhas are kind of the what we haven't finished yet, and they are electrically, magnetically attracted back to us in the next life. So we can't run away from it.
Yeah, it's called the Mayavi Rupa, that higher aspect of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
How long is our Kamaloka state?
The Kamaloka state is dependent upon how materialistic somebody is. We know that Devakan is kind of maybe give or take 1,500 years, but Kamaloka is definitely dependent upon how attached that person is to their current life. And if they're very materialistic, they're not happy about having died, it may take longer. But we don't know that there is a number attached to Kamaloka.
Well, I just think that the word that you use, attachment, those things in life that that's how we live. We become attached to
mm-hmm.
things, and we build a bond. We, you know, but we have to learn detachment. That's one of the lessons of the Gita. We have to become detached. So that therefore, that will determine your Kamaloka.
And it is suggested that at the end of each day that you do a review of the previous day, so that if you realize that something has not gone right, you've made mistakes, you've been mean to somebody, you've been angry, to look at those and try and rectify what it is that has gone on in the day, because the more you can take care of those attachments, that materialism in this life, then your time in Kamaloka will be less and you can go to Devakan quicker. So there's things that we can do in a living life to help us in our after death states. Yes.
So we're wondering if the normal process of the sloughing off and leaving the astral behind, but is it still there? I mean, we come Is it not really, what we're saying is, does it doesn't really die, apparently, because it says Avicii is the same as second death, and that is annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's annihilation for a whole, from what we understand, a whole period of evolution. It's not, they will come back
mm-hmm.
in a future period of evolution, but they're basically done. Almost equivalent, the opposite would be attaining nirvana and leaving everyone
right.
behind.
Now, in regards to that idea of annihilation, our understanding is that, and it wasn't really mentioned, but our understanding, especially when it comes to the black magician or somebody incredibly wicked and materialistic, is that over the course of time, over the course of lives, they become so black and so evil that there's this break between their higher nature and lower mind, so that they, as was just said, they have to wait out this period of evolution until the next time around. So I know we're not specific enough there. Yes?
So we have a follow-up would be that the Egyptians, through their mummification process, mm-hmm. apparently the theory behind it or the religious belief behind it was to try to keep as many of the principles in the mummy so it's not attracted to other beings. So when they come back, we don't know if that's even, I mean, I don't know if it works or not, but apparently that was the principle behind it. We have no idea whether that really works or not.
We don't know that really works. Because it's a whole physical idea, this attachment to the physical body, which Theosophy puts forth the idea of cremation, because once the body's cremated, there's that attachment of that astral form, that there's nothing for it to attach to, so it will dissipate quicker as well, because there's that attachment is gone. So when the astral body dissipates in Kamaloka, there is that higher, that Akashic portion that will come back again. And then it picks up the skandhas and we form another astral body and start over again. In the back.
Well, when it comes to the Egyptians, we can't hope to understand what they knew. Perhaps they had an understanding of the astral way beyond what we do. Perhaps they were able to use the astral in ways that we can't even imagine. Moving blocks of stone. But our limited understanding of the astral is purely material.
Mm-hmm.
That it is, if the story matter, it's this kind of elemental force. And these all have their elementals associated with it. And that's how we color the world
mm-hmm.
through the three qualities. But we do it. They're there. We just fall into place. We're attracted to it, or again, hypnotized by all the images that are being reflected back to us
mm-hmm.
from the astral.
And it's interesting because what we know of the astral light, is a lot of it we think is from seances, because there's mediums are not able to access the Akasha. So we don't, we think that a lot of what we know is from that. But we...
Well, a lot that we know is from theosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the only clear picture that was given was by HP because of all the mediumistic practices that were going on then. But, you know, people are now becoming more mediumistic.
Mm-hmm.
Where we are. But, and once we understand that, then everything we can sort of try to sort out as best we can.
So unfortunately, we can't go on with this right now. Our meeting is over. Thank you.